This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And we're moving into the holiday season. By the time that many of you listen to this podcast, you may be well into holiday celebration mode. So happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Hanukkah's coming a little later this year. It fairly coincides with Christmas and New Year's this year. Kind of late. And Kwanzaa and whatever. Festivus.
Festivus.
For those of you who...
Seinfeld fans.
For those of you who are under 30, that is a Seinfeld reference. And you might have missed it, but in, there was a show once.
Where Festivus for the rest of us.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What was the premise of that show? Is that it was sort of like the
show about nothing.
The show about nothing. Yeah, right. But I mean, of that particular episode was that because it was sort of like a non-denominational celebration.
I believe so. I'm trying to remember the episode. But
okay.
Yeah. I was a huge Seinfeld fan.
Right. It defined an era.
Yes.
So we answer questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. I'm going to start with a question that's actually not a listener question. It's a question that came to me from a family member who has a little kid. And it's a question on behalf of her babysitter. You know, it's like one of the occupational hazards of being me is that I get a lot of questions like the babysitter wants advice. So the babysitter recently, you know, obviously this is super important because in New York, a babysitter that's reliable is like gold.
Is platinum.
It's like you need like a good real estate agent. You need a good doctor.
Yes.
You need a good
accountant,
attorney, financial advisor.
You need a good team.
Right.
Babysitter is one.
Babysitter is absolutely key because you know. So anyway, so a reliable babysitter is hard to come. So I want to help her out. So she sends me only this fact pattern. I've never met the babysitter, so I don't know what this even person looks like, you know, what their height and weight is or how old they are. I have a feeling it's a relatively young individual, though. These are the numbers. This is, and I probably lost the email. Oh, here it is. She recently became vegetarian because... She was told of a very high triglycerides. Her triglycerides were 457. Her total cholesterol is 231, and her HDL is 40. So on the supposition that she has high fat
HDL
in her
40.
Bloodstream, she's going on a very low fat diet and becoming vegetarian. And so my response was wrong. She needs to go on a very low carb diet.
Yes.
And take a lot of fish oil, which is a fat. Actually, the one medical intervention for which, well, actually two. Now fish oil, the prescription kind of fish oil is now approved for cardiovascular prevention. That was a big breakthrough for the makers of Vascepa, which is the synthetic fish oil that is thought to be the preferable alternative to all that contaminated stuff you get in a health food store, you know. But anyway, let's not go there. So one indication is for cardiovascular prevention. The other, and this has been a long-standing permitted claim about fish oil is that it lowers triglycerides. Mm-hmm. But when given high doses, one or two a day won't do it, but you've got to take like six a day, it will lower your triglycerides. Mm-hmm. So what say you, Layla? Was I on target with that?
Well, yes, absolutely. And a better way to lower triglycerides rather than all that prescription fish oil is to really lower the carbs. Now, another question to ask the babysitter is, what type of diet were they on?
And now they're on a vegetarian.
They're vegetarian. Richard. If they were on a junky junk food diet, to go vegetarian, her numbers may get better. His numbers may get better. Assuming.
Yeah,
a babysitter, maybe a female.
It's a cheat. The person's name is Wendy.
Okay, so Wendy might do better if her diet was very junk foody and she's gone vegetarian. However,
if she's having lots of chips and she's having rice and things like that.
That will keep the triglycerides high. Or if the triglycerides do lower, they're not going to come as low as we would like to see them, mm-hmm. which would be not just under 150, which is what mainstream medicine likes to see, but under 100.
And we like 50, 60, 70. Our patients on low-carb diets, they're
under 80, definitely.
My triglycerides are like, 30 or 50.
Yeah, yeah. That's where we want to see triglycerides. So, and Wendy's HDL is only a 40. Yeah.
I would suspect she has metabolic syndrome. Hmm. I mean, if I could to visualize her, I would think she might be...
That two criteria right
have
there.
Have a little fat around the midsection.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's, looks relatively thin, but she's metabolically unfit.
Right, right. So to increase the low triglycerides, which they are too low, we want to see triglycerides in the 70s, not at 40, which
no,
is
no,
borderline.
No, you said triglycerides. You mean HDL.
Thank you. Yeah. We want HDL to be higher because HDL is the so-called garbage truck, the so-called good cholesterol. How do we increase HDL? Two ways in this order. Eat more fat, like the fish oil, like your fatty salmon and your tuna and your avocados and your nuts and seeds
olive
and your good
oil.
Quality olive oil, and exercise.
Right. And the other thing that I would guess from this person's profile is that they don't do a lot of exercise. Hmm. Because one of the ways to sort of burn down your triglycerides is with exercise.
Right. Well, if you're chasing around a 1.5-year-old.
Oh, and this kid is very mobile.
There you go.
Yeah.
That in itself.
So she's going to, things will look up for her.
Back in the day, I used to tell adults who were older than me back in the day, I was middle age, I'm going to gain weight, this is going to happen. I'm like, no, go spend your time with a 12-year-old, any 12-year-old, girl, boy, probably a boy, you will lose the weight.
Right.
If you follow them around all day long, that's the difference.
Just
we're
to,
less active.
To give you an idea where I was when I was 12 years old, I was at the New York World's Fair.
Uh-huh.
I was 11 because it was 1964. 64. No, I think it was 12. I was.
You were 12, really?
11, okay. 11 or 12. So
okay.
About to turn 12. And I just remember the enormous amount of energy I had to go to every single one of the pavilions there.
Wow.
The, the GM pavilion with the cars, the crazy, car ride to the future. Mm-hmm. And, the GE pavilion, with the, robots and mannequins that, and the kitchen of the future and all that stuff. And I think I ran my poor relatives ragged. I think they tag teamed with me. It's like, you go with him today. He's like, I'm exhausted. I went with him yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But you're a little too young, I think, to remember the New York City World's Fair.
That was the year I was born, 1964.
In Flushing.
Yes.
You were born there.
I was, yes.
Yeah, but you were not cognizant
Greece,
of that,
no,
right? Yeah.
No.
But anyway, so it's true what you say.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I kept hearing about that World's Fair growing up. So anyway, so the best way to lower triglycerides is that way, not necessarily vegetarianism, low fat.
No,
not low fat.
I think
or stop eating meat.
Taking a wrong turn.
Totally. You would have to come off a very bad diet of donuts and French fries and all of that kind of stuff.
Meat won't do it.
No, meat will not raise your triglycerides. Nutrition is not as simple as plumbing. We've said this many, many times before. The fat in your food does not equal fat in your body. The cholesterol in your food
Right.
Does not equal cholesterol in your body. Your liver will churn out a whole lot of triglycerides in response to too many carbohydrates.
Right. And especially, it turns out, from fructose, fruit sugar.
Yeah.
This person may be now...
drinking a lot of fruit juice.
Drinking fruit juice, a fruitarian kind of vegetarian diet.
Didn't Steve Jobs do that and get terrible pancreatitis?
Oh, possibly.
He was a fruitarian for a while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
I know he had pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a such thing as too much fruit. And triglycerides tend to be higher in people in the summer.
Right. We notice that.
Summer fruits are available. Yeah. They're delicious. People, but everybody's having juice and smoothies and the other thing. And too much sugar is often happening there. Yep. So, okay.
So anyway, this is a question that's sort of off the beaten track coming to me from another source. But
yeah. Okay. We have an email from Bonnie. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I try to do a mini fast each night for 12 or 13 hours. After an early dinner, I lay off food until 8 the next morning. But I take lots of vitamins in the evening. Do you think that vitamin intake interrupts my mini fast? Possible.
Well, it's possible. I mean, let's say you take a zinc or a chromium or, you know, there's not a lot of calories in that.
Right.
And so...
But those should be taken with a meal. So Bonnie would take that with her early dinner.
Right, right.
I'm trying to think of the things she's taking at night.
See,
maybe they're amino acids or probiotics.
I don't see a strong need to take things at, you know, away from her fasting time.
Yeah.
For example, you would get a certain number of calories from taking fish oil.
Yes.
Or any oil-based product.
And other products like maybe a D-ribose or an D-mannose, ribose, those types of things that are alternative sugars, which are beneficial, healthy, but still have some calories.
Yeah, and because vitamins themselves don't have a lot of excipients that are caloric, you know, they're it's not like, you know, I would recommend that you take her vitamins with foods.
Yes.
As I do.
Yes.
I mean, there are certain things you want to take at bedtime, like melatonin maybe, or maybe you're taking CBD to help you with sleep, or, you know, something, maybe a little magnesium to relax you at night.
But yeah.
It shouldn't upset the fast.
It shouldn't upset the fast. No. And interestingly, Bonnie's doing it in a way that I like to do it. I like to do the early dinner, very late lunch thing, and then not eat until breakfast the next morning and not wait and kind of skip breakfast, so to speak, and have breakfast or the first meal around lunchtime.
Right.
So it's a great way to do it.
Let's change order a little bit, because we generally reserve our commercial time for part two. But let's allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you right here in part one. Listen up.
Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now, some more questions. Layla, what's next?
We have an email from Kate. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I love your show and want to thank you for all you do. I'm 54 years old and recently had a routine colonoscopy, and once again, I have polyps that need to be removed. They were, quote, large, around 1 centimeter. So I have to go back again in 3 years.
It's about like a third of an inch.
Yeah. Are there any supplements I should or should not be taking that could help with this issue? Why do I keep getting polyps? This is my third or fourth time they were identified and removed. Is there anything I can do? Kate is 54. She currently takes NT Factor, a multivitamin, fish oil, ubiquinol, vitamin C, D, and B, and magnesium, and Dr. O'Hara's. Nice,
you know,
protocol.
I would, however, it is possible that all the multivitamins, let's not jump the gun. Multivitamins don't cause cancer or promote precancer, but they might act as growth factors for, the polyps, which I'm just theorizing that maybe she could try between now and the next time to not take her multi and just selectively take things like D. The B vitamins in particular might be a concern. Things that are preventive of colon cancer, there's some evidence that, and not necessarily of polyps, but of colon cancer.
Because it is uncertain whether, even though the polyps are large, that they would become
the
cancer. They remove that prophylactically.
A small proportion of polyps are precancerous or cancerous. So it could be that she's genetically predisposed to polyp formation. Aspirin might have a preventive effect. There's some literature on aspirin and colonic polyps. Certainly things like curcumin and maybe sulforaphane or DIM, even folate may have an anti-proliferative effect, or, could go either way, because B vitamins can prevent cancer, but they can also, once cancer is there, promote cancer. I'm not saying this is cancer, but I'm just saying by analogy. What I will tell you anecdotally is that we have patients who have had a series of polyps, and then we put them on a prophylactic program with some of the things I just mentioned, and they don't turn up with polyps. Vitamin D certainly has a protective effect, but she is taking vitamin D.
She's taking vitamin D. I like that she's taking Dr. O'Hara's probiotics.
And probiotics also may have an effect on the intestinal milieu. Is there a diet effect? Maybe a low fiber diet, could predispose. But
an anti-inflammatory diet may be helpful. Targeting inflammation, and maybe that's one of the ways
aspirin broccoli sprouts, sulforaphane, DIM, things like that.
Yeah. I would take green tea extract.
And absolutely
ECG.
Green tea. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
And or drink it. Good.
Drink it. Take it. Absolutely. Oh, Kate. Sorry about that. But wow. It's great that you're being proactive yourself.
And that she's being followed.
And that you're being followed.
Yeah.
So all the best to you. Continued good health to you.
Yeah. This is a circumstance. We don't like people to get colonoscopies all the time. But this is a circumstance where they need more frequent colonoscopies to make sure that things aren't developing.
Right. So good. All right. We have an email from Christine. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. As always, thanks for all you do. Really enjoy listening and learning from your podcasts. Thank you for listening, Christine. Last week, I was wearing the wrong shoes. Lost my balance and broke my left ankle, which has been sprained several times over the years. I had surgery. I'm in a cast and have no weight bearing on it for 6 weeks. This is a big change for me as I exercise every day, walking, yoga, weights. And I'm taking this change as a chance to slow down and maybe approach life a little differently. Dr. Hoffman, I just ordered
your
bone protocol formulas.
It's a message from Mother Nature, like, slow down. Slow down. You move too fast.
Right.
You know.
Have to make the morning last.
Right.
Garfunkel.
I was going to go there.
Yeah. So Christine just ordered bone protocol formulas, Dr. Hoffman.
Can I just go back a little bit on that polyps thing? There is a finding, calcium supplements up odds of colon polyps.
Calcium supplements. Hey, Kate, coming back to you.
Women and smokers appear to be at higher risk when taking calcium supplements, not vitamin D.
Wow.
Well, or a combination of calcium and vitamin D, but not vitamin D alone.
Right. So now here is a third reason for that to be wary of supplemental calcium. The first two reasons being that it could form maybe calcification in coronary arteries. It may form suspicious calcification in soft tissue like breasts. And now possibly a third reason.
Yeah.
Polyps. Interesting. Kate, if you're taking calcium, it may be worth your while to reevaluate and stop.
If they're not that necessary anyway.
Right, they're not. Because we don't make the house stronger by adding more siding or more shingles or anything like that. And most people have very normal calcium levels given a metabolic panel, a blood test, your standard blood test that your primary care does for you every year. If you were low on calcium, that would be a reason to take it. But most people are not low. They're in the normal range. And anybody who is bordering on high that we've seen over the years, we would tell them, hey, stop taking all that calcium. Mm-hmm. Unless they have a high calcium for different reasons.
Right.
So that would be something.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, that seems to be one of the latest takes on the relationship between supplements and colon polyps.
Yeah.
But notwithstanding some of the preventive measures we talked to you about earlier.
Right. So, okay, and now coming back up to Christine,
who broke
her ankle.
Right.
Yeah, because she was wearing the wrong shoes. She's ordered bone protocol. Through your recommendation, Dr. Hoffman, I'm following a low-carb diet with vegetables, organic chicken, wild fish, grass-fed beef. A friend of mine suggested finding some protein shakes to supplement my bone healing, as his doctor recommended them for a deep wound that he has on his thigh.
That's not quite the same thing, but
it's not.
You know, I think she sounds like she's getting adequate protein by really stocking up on additional protein.
Yeah.
It isn't necessarily going to heal it faster.
Exactly. And just a little note about your friend with that deep thigh, that deep wound on his thigh. It could be that he is prone to that from a low albumin or a low visceral protein status or some other issue that Christine would not apply to you.
Right.
Because you probably are getting enough protein.
Yeah, that there's
given what
some,
you just said you're eating.
Yeah, I don't know what this, you know, I don't know how to transfer that knowledge from this other person's situation to her situation.
Exactly.
So, yes, I mean, a very low protein diet might compromise bone knitting.
Yeah.
Because bone initially lays down a protein matrix before the calcium matrix is repaired.
And Christine, I'm sure your friend believes it's good advice, but what is applying to him would not necessarily apply to you at all. So
what
definitely
I would
check in
do,
with
you know, for rehab, I mean, this person exercises a lot, I would get in the pool, I would swim. I would swim with a paddle board or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, and... Mm-hmm.
She's in a cast right now after surgery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she's going to not be able to get in the water.
Right.
But, you know, you can sort of hobble over to the gym and do an upper body workout.
Yeah.
There's what some people use, and, you know, I've done this when I've had injuries, is they use, upper body...
Yeah.
Stuff like there's an upper body treadmill which you use with your arms. I've actually seen people in wheelchairs use that. You know, people who can't have no lower body mobility, they can get an aerobic workout.
Yes.
You can even perform a stress test that way. You know, when people can't walk the treadmill, you know, they just and it. Believe you me, you get your arms really tired there. And to the extent you get an aerobic workout, it'll actually help heal your ankle because it'll promote circulation through your body.
Yeah.
Where circulation might be compromised down there, and then it's just good to get that happening. So, you know, hobble over to the gym, use some of the upper body equipment, especially if you're used to exercising.
Right, lat pull downs and things, and your bicep, tricep.
Yeah, with light weights, you know, shoulder presses and things like that.
And mind that ankle.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, this is something that I think people have to, they have to have a backup plan, you know, because everybody gets injured if you exercise.
At some point.
Or if you don't exercise. And in order, and over my career in exercising, which is spans now, you know, since my 20s, I was a late starter because I wasn't a big high school or college athlete. I started in college. If you're just a runner, like my doorman, I talked to my doorman. He says, oh, I'm going out in a couple of days. I'm going to have knee surgery. He says, it's been terrible because I can't exercise. I gained 30 pounds. Huh. I said, well, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, you're going to get knee surgery, you're going to be better, but you could have cross-trained during that time.
Mm-hmm.
You could have been swimming, you mm-hmm. could have been doing upper body exercise, but his exercise modality was whatever, running on a treadmill or something. And once that did not work for him, he ate the same amount of food and didn't exercise. And, you know, thermodynamic equation, he gained weight.
Yes.
And so it's good to have a lot of exercise options
mm-hmm.
and don't stop exercising when you injure one part of your body because, you know, it's going to be your back, it's going to be your shoulder, it's going to be something. If you have a lifelong commitment to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, you're going to have some setbacks and the solution is to have a diversified portfolio of exercise options for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agree, definitely. Best of luck in your rehab,
Christine. That's actually why I like triathlons because I broke my leg, mm-hmm. 2006, and pretty soon I was able to start training again swimming. You know, I couldn't run for literally, it was at least 6 months, if not.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it could take a year.
Oh, yeah.
To completely heal.
I remember that I broke my leg before one triathlon. I was going to be in the New York City triathlon. And the next year, I sat out a year later another triathlon.
Mm.
I cheered people on from the mm-hmm. from the finish line, but I wasn't ready to do it. But the year after.
Yeah.
So
then
literally,
you were ready to do it again. Yeah.
A couple years later, I was back doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. it's going to be a long haul in recovering.
Right.
And especially with ankle injuries are very persnickety, and you have to do the proper rehab to strengthen the ankle before you undertake some of the previous exercises.
Physical therapy is a wonderful, wonderful
PT.
Thing. Go
PT.
Do some physical therapy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
All right. Well, okay, we hit the pause button because we're going to divide the podcast into two parts. Layla, what are we going to tackle in part two?
Can you give me some more information about your therapy for Parkinson's disease?
Oh, okay. We'll talk about Parkinson's in just a moment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back with part two.